Welcome to Text Messages. These recommendations for teen readers are produced by ReadWriteThink.org, a partnership between the National Council of Teachers of English and the International Reading Association. This is episode 71 of Text Messages, guided by Teen Book Awards. I'm your host, Jennifer Bueller. For diehard young adult literature fans, following Teen Book Awards is a ritual passion. Speculating on potential YA award winners isn't so different, really, from predicting the Oscars or filling in March Madness brackets. It's energizing and fun. If you live, eat, and breathe books, you tend to develop a personal stake in debates over which titles are the best of the year. For those who are more casual fans of YA lit, Teen Book Awards simply provide great reading lists. Although some YA experts think we've reached the point of having too many awards, I love seeing teen books honored throughout the year. Whether it's the American Library Association Youth Media Awards in January, the Sybil's Awards given by book bloggers in February, or the LA Times Book Prize in April, each new list of winners gives readers the opportunity to discover titles and authors they might have otherwise missed. In the past, I've used this annual book award show to report on what I call YA blockbusters. That is, titles from the past year that have been honored by multiple award committees. I still love analyzing which books cross the most award lists and making note of talked about titles that were passed over. For this year's show, once again, I'll introduce you to titles that were widely recognized as the best of the best, but I want to focus this time on award winners that were my personal favorites. I've never been in the habit of making my own best of the year lists, but if I did, these titles would be on it. In this episode, you'll hear about novels focused on first love, surviving natural disasters, and healing from trauma. I'll feature graphic novels that explore the Chinese Boxer Rebellion and the Civil Rights Movement, plus a nonfiction book that tells the story of Japanese Americans who were sent to internment camps during World War II. I'll end the show with books that pay tribute to the pleasures of cooking, the power of graphic design, and the comforts of poetry. Each of these titles impressed and inspired me. Award lists were my guide to finding them. Those same lists can lead you to even more great reading options for teens. The first set of books I want to tell you about are three very different coming-of-age novels, each of which was honored for strong literary merit and teen appeal. Perhaps the most deeply loved book of the past year is Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell. With a glowing review from John Green early last summer in the New York Times, Eleanor and Park quickly gained a wide and devoted readership. I was amazed to hear it mentioned just last week on an independent radio station here in St. Louis. Set in Omaha, Nebraska in 1986, Eleanor and Park is the story of two misfit teens who fall in love. But that description doesn't begin to capture the texture and honesty of this book. Eleanor and Park is exemplary on so many levels. Grounded in 1980s period detail, the book presents an unflinching look at being poor, alone, and bullied. That's Eleanor. And then finding safe haven in love with another person. That would be Park. But don't think that falling in love is easy in this story. It's not. When Eleanor and Park first meet, it's on the school bus. She is new and outrageous, with wild hair, bizarre clothes, and a round body that takes up way too much space in the aisle. The kids in the back yell out insults. No one will let her sit down. The only reason Park finally allows Eleanor to share his seat is because he's disgusted and embarrassed for her. Day after day, Eleanor and Park continue to sit together, but it's grudging on both their parts. Slowly, ever so slowly, their hostility fades, as does their need for self-protection. Eleanor reads Park's comic books over his shoulder. One day he gives her a mixtape. Their exchanges are awkward, and then they are electrifying. Noticing each other turns to needing each other. Each new moment of romantic discovery is a wonder, as is Rainbow Rowell's ability to describe the joy they feel together. I don't think I've ever read a book that so perfectly captures the fire and ache of romantic love. I fell in love with these characters as I watched them fall in love with each other. one of the most celebrated books of the year, Eleanor and Park was named a Prince Honor Book, a top 10 best fiction for young adults, and the winner of the Boston Globe Horn Book Award for Fiction. It was a finalist for the Sybil's YA Fiction Award, and it was a quick pick for reluctant teen readers. Even the audio version was recognized with an Odyssey Honor Award. If you read just one YA book from the past year, I would love to see you choose Eleanor and Park. If you're looking for a book with critical social consciousness and page-turning suspense, then you must get a copy of Matt de la Peña's newest novel, The Living. Start with a working-class kid named Shai who takes a summer job on a California luxury cruise ship. Set up provocative interactions between the privileged class of passengers and the hired help. Throw in a whiff of romance and a layer of political intrigue, and you'll come away with a terrific new genre-bending novel. The Living is both an action-based adventure book and an unapologetic critique of class privilege. What begins as a story of working-class identity turns into a story of survival when the big one hits, the earthquake that Californians have waited on for decades. In the midst of catastrophe, social hierarchies get upended and corporate conspiracies get revealed. This is literary entertainment with a critical edge. In a blog post, Matt wrote that his goal with The Living was to do something different from what he'd done in his previous books. In the past, he brought conflict to his characters. With The Living, he wanted to bring his characters to the conflict. What readers get, then, is another half-Mexican kid from the barrio who's grappling with political and social inequalities, only this time, he's the star of what Matt calls a bigger, louder book. I shrieked on the day I learned that The Living had won a Pura Belpré Honor Award. In case you don't know, the Belpré is given alongside the Coretta Scott King Awards each year in January to outstanding works of Latino literature. The Living went on to be named to the ALA list of best fiction for young adults. It's the perfect book to give teens who may not have connected with Matt's quieter novels. It's equally perfect to give teens who just want a good page-turner. Along the way, The Living might pull or push those teens into important conversations about power, social class, and our prejudices. Readers who know and love Matt's other books will once again find his signature elements of romance, social criticism, and authentic narrative voice. I said earlier that book awards are a guide for my own reading. That's especially true when the ALA announces its shortlist of finalists for the William C. Morris Award each year in December. The Morris Award puts debut works of young adult literature in the limelight. If it weren't for the Morris, I might have never discovered Sex and Violence by Carrie Mesrobian. I'm always willing to read a book about a teen who is recovering from trauma. I especially want to read a book where the trauma is raw and recovery is hard. Sex and Violence is that book. Some listeners will be put off by the title. Others will be put off by the main character, Evan, who specializes in sex without love. But what readers will get, if they're willing to give this book a try, is a deep look at how Evan became the person he is. Because of his father's job, Evan has spent his adolescence moving from school to school, looking for girls who will say yes. Simply put, he enjoys hookups, and if the girl already has a boyfriend, that just adds to the thrill. As a reader, you don't have to wait for Evan to get caught. When the story begins, it's already happened. Attacked in the dormitory shower by his roommate and several other boys, Evan was beaten so badly he needed surgery to remove his ruptured spleen. What happened to Colette, the girl he'd been hooking up with, was even worse. Evan's father has taken him to their family cottage on a lake in Minnesota to heal. Through sessions with his therapist and letters to Colette, we slowly learn about Evan's past. Sex and Violence is a book about sex, yes. On a deeper level, though, it's a book about regret and self-loathing. It's about trying to go on living in the aftermath of violence. And most of all, it's about the vulnerable core of young men. If you care about teen boys, you need to read this book. Ever since I read Sex and Violence, I've been following Carrie Mesrobian on Twitter and reading her blog. I love her voice, both inside the novel and out in real life. I'm thrilled that Sex and Violence was honored as a finalist for the Sybil's YA Fiction Award, as well as the Morris Award. Carrie's next book, Perfectly Good White Boy, comes out in October, and I can't wait to read it. The next set of books I want to tell you about bring history to life through the power of pictures and narrative storytelling. First is the acclaimed graphic novel Boxers and Saints by Jean Luen Yang. Listeners may recognize Jean Yang's name if they read one of his earlier books, The Prince Award winner, American Born Chinese. That book used magical realism and elements from Chinese mythology to tell a story about growing up Chinese in white America. Jean Yang uses those same techniques in Boxers and Saints, but this book has an epic scope and an even more ambitious purpose. Once again, the heart of the work is a coming-of-age story, only here the setting is 19th century China and a war called the Boxer Rebellion. This is history I knew nothing about, an uprising of Chinese peasants against the white Christian missionaries who came to convert them. In Yang's telling, it's history made personal, an account of war as told through the stories of two teenagers on opposite sides of the conflict. Part of the brilliance of Boxers and Saints is how Yang foregrounds perspective taking. He gives readers two parallel storylines presented in two volumes, each of which explores a young person's process of becoming through the personal layer of family history, the larger arc of political history, and a final layer, which is magic and mysticism. As the leader of the Boxers, Little Bao channels the Chinese emperor god during fight scenes and moments of moral decision-making. As the leader of the Saints, Four Girl channels Joan of Arc. Woven through these layers are questions about moral ambiguity. War at what cost? Who is the hero and who is the villain in war? The answer changes depending on how you look at the situation. Boxers and Saints is a remarkable book that has been honored for general literary excellence as well as excellence as a graphic novel. It was named a finalist for the National Book Award and the LA Times Book Prize. It was honored as a top 10 great graphic novel for teens, and it was a finalist for the Sybil's YA Graphic Novel Award. Another graphic novel that received high honors from award committees is March, Book 1, by John Lewis and Andrew Aiden, illustrated by acclaimed graphic novelist Nate Powell. Broadly speaking, March is the story of Georgia Congressman John Lewis's experience in the civil rights movement. Like Boxers and Saints, March filters the larger arc of history through the experiences of individuals. Through an alternating past-present narrative structure, Congressman Lewis tells the story of his life to a little boy and his mother who have come to Washington, D.C. on President Barack Obama's Inauguration Day. Readers learn about Lewis's childhood growing up as the son of a sharecropper, his first experiences thinking about the differences between white children's lives and black children's lives, and the series of events that drew him into civil rights work with Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. March ends on a cliffhanger as Lewis and his companions participate in the integration of Nashville lunch counters. The narrative backdrop on the book's final pages are words taken from a speech by Dr. King. Walk together, children. Don't get weary. March was honored with some of the same awards as Boxers and Saints, and deservedly so. It made the list of top 10 great graphic novels for teens, and it was a finalist for the Sybil's Middle Grade Graphic Novel Award. March was also named a Coretta Scott King Honor Book. As a blend of political history and personal biography, March is a terrific addition to the growing number of nonfiction books for teens that present new and original accounts of historical research. Thanks to the YALSA Excellence in Nonfiction Award, I read one more book of outstanding teen nonfiction this year, and that is Imprisoned, The Betrayal of Japanese Americans During World War II by Martin Sandler. Imprisoned is a compulsively readable book that exposes readers to a lesser-known and shameful part of World War II history, which was the internment of Japanese Americans in response to an explosion of anti-Asian prejudice after the bombing at Pearl Harbor. Readers might know about the fact of Japanese internment, but what most have probably not heard before are firsthand accounts of the way this incarceration happened. Japanese families along the West Coast were given as little as 2 weeks to sell off their belongings and report to their assigned internment camp. Just imagine being forced to leave your home, your livelihood, and even your pets with no idea when you will be allowed to return. Imagine being housed in a place with inadequate medical care and inadequate schooling for your children. Imagine being taught patriotism while you are being held prisoner in your own country. That's what happened to thousands of Japanese Americans during the war. What makes Martin Sandler's work so good is how he focuses on the dignity and resilience of those who were imprisoned in the camps. Using photographs and first-person testimonials, he shows us the gardens they built, the baseball teams they created, and the art they made. Like Tanya Lee Stone in Courage Has No Color, he also tells the stories of Japanese men in the camps who volunteered for military service abroad, despite the fact that their civil rights were being denied at home. How ironic to learn that Japanese Americans from the internment camps were members of the unit that liberated Dachau, one of the most notorious Nazi concentration camps. Sandler's narrative in Imprisoned doesn't end with the end of the war. He goes on to trace the aftermath of internment, both in the post-war years and in the decades after that, as Japanese Americans sought political redress for the wrongs that were done to them. As testament to the quality and popular appeal of Sandler's storytelling, Imprisoned was named a finalist for the YALSA Excellence in Nonfiction Award, and it was this year's winner of the Sybils Award for Middle Grade and Young Adult Nonfiction. The last set of books I want to tell you about offer an engaging mix of unusual topics presented in creative, visually appealing formats. The first is Relish, a graphic novel memoir by Lucy Nisley. How wonderful is this concept? You decide to tell the story of your life, and the lens you use to tell that story is cooking. It's an approach that makes sense for Lucy. As she explains, she grew up with cooks and bakers, eaters and critics, and meals to remember. Her most vivid memories are connected to the recollection of how things tasted. That means that each narrative moment in Relish is anchored in a specific experience with food. As a bonus, each chapter is followed by a step-by-step illustrated recipe or a how-to cooking guide. What a lovely way to tell a story. When Lucy remembers gardening with her mom as a child, she follows up with her mom's recipe for pesto. After she travels to Tokyo as a teenager, she teaches us how to make sushi rolls. And when she's a student in art school in Chicago, she shows us how she made shepherd's pie for her stressed-out classmates during finals. The whole book is a touching reminder of what food can be when we take the time to care about it. Food is comfort, as connection to others, and as memory. If the recipe pages weren't cool enough, Relish also contains an afterword. Lucy explains that part of her research for the book involved digging through family photos. Those photos comprise a makeshift album on the book's final pages. The afterword offers one more take on Lucy's growing up and one more tribute to her love of food and her family. Though Relish didn't cross multiple award lists like some other books on this month's show, I'm so pleased to report that it was one of 10 books selected for this year's ALEX Awards, which are ALA recommendations of adult books with appeal to teen readers. Another book with the power to draw teens in through its visual format and then engage them in its content is Go, A Kid's Guide to Graphic Design by Chip Kidd. Go is another book I discovered through the YALSA Excellence in Nonfiction Award, and it's another book that I think is terrific. Readers might not know Chip Kidd's name, but they will recognize his work. He's the artist behind the iconic dinosaur image for Jurassic Park. But Go isn't the story of Chip's career. Rather, it's a tribute to design, what it is, how it works, and why it matters. As Kidd explains, design is purposeful planning. It's problem solving and making something cool in the process. It's message sending to the brain. That's why effective graphic design can make you do things like stop when you see a stop sign. Given that the average American is exposed to thousands of images a day, from advertising and the internet to tattoos and t-shirts, understanding how design works is pretty important. Fortunately, Kid's book is a primer on design. By walking us through concepts like form, typography, content, and concept, he shows us all there is to notice and see in the design work around us. The vocabulary and conceptual framework he provides will help teens become better observers of design and more thoughtful readers of design choices. The final book on my list of favorites does something that no other book in this episode does. It uses poetry and accompanying artwork to offer readers aid and comfort in their everyday living. The book is called What the Heart Knows: Chants, Charms, and Blessings. It's a slim little volume written by Joyce Sidman. I knew I recognized Joyce Sidman's name when I first heard about the book. She's the author of Dark Emperor and Other Poems of the Night, which I read after it won a Newbery Honor Award several years ago. I love Dark Emperor, but I just may love What the Heart Knows more. I had planned to include it in this episode, despite the fact that it was passed over by every book award committee at ALA this year. And then, just a couple weeks ago, it was shortlisted for the LA Times Book Prize. That was sweet vindication. It's all too rare that we see works of poetry on award lists for young people. This collection of poems, in the form of Chants, Charms, and Blessings, illustrates how poetry can soothe us and help us cope. Sidman explains that the collection began one dark morning when she was feeling anxious and wrote Chant Against the Dark. She didn't know what to do with that poem, or the others like it, that she wrote as time went by. She just wrote them to feel better. She set them aside in the moment, but she always came back to them in times of stress. The book grew in bits and pieces whenever she needed a poem to help her. In the months since I read this book, I've copied out poems and given them to friends and colleagues. I've read and reread the poems myself. On her website, Sidman asks, "How powerful are words? Can they make things happen? Stop them from happening? Can they protect us, comfort us, enchant us, give us strength?" We weave a web of words around us every day, from morning till night, to communicate, to empathize, to control. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have a book of words like that to turn to in times of need? Yes, I thought, it would be wonderful. And so I keep a copy of Sidman's book on my shelf. When I open it, it comforts me. I hope you will read these books and recommend them to the teens in your life. Each title should be available at your local library or bookstore. Remember that no book is right for every reader, so preview books for appropriate reading level and content before passing them on to your teen. Next month, I'll be back to bring you an interview with Rita Williams Garcia, winner of this year's Coretta Scott King Author Award for PSB 11, a sequel to her 2011 Newbery Honor book, One Crazy Summer. Tune in to hear Rita talk about her character development, her research, and why she thinks fiction can be a powerful way to teach young people about history. Until next time, I'm Jennifer Bueller. More episodes of Text Messages are available at www.readwritethink.org/textmessages. You can listen to our elementary book podcast, Chatting About Books, at www.readwritethink.org/chattingaboutbooks. Text Messages is supported by the Verizon Foundation through thinkfinity.org and produced monthly by the National Council of Teachers of English and the International Reading Association. Music in this podcast is courtesy of Scott Andrew. Thanks for listening and look forward to more text messages soon.